I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Ken. And you were asking a moment ago about the makeup of my client base.
Yes, I was, because you do seem to have a rather diverse spread of clients. Is there some pattern you've seen emerge?
It's interesting how things have evolved, Ken, because after the property crash in 89, when I made the switch to acquire property for clients rather than act as a selling agent, probably the two key client groups that I had then were the senior executives who were in legal, accounting and other professional firms, and also those that may have retired or had sold their business, and which they'd been successfully running for a number of years. And what I found was that they had a reluctance to attend the free seminars that are being offered. As you're aware, that you turn up and you'll spend 2 hours with someone and they'll pass on all their knowledge and there's no charge. And the reason they're reluctant to attend these free seminars is that they had a concern that in going there they would meet other friends or colleagues, and those friends would say to them, well, why are you here? I mean, you should know all this stuff. Now, just because they're a senior partner in a legal firm or accounting firm or have a large business that they've been running successfully doesn't necessarily mean, because they're an expert in one area, that they are an expert in another. But that's the perception. And they were finding that difficult. And so I guess in writing the books that I wrote to start with, that provided them with an easy entry into the world of commercial property, where they could at their pace digest, understand and raise their knowledge, so at least they were able to ask the right question and not feel completely out of their depth. And one thing led to another, and they wanted workshops, which I ran for a full day on a Saturday, and then that developed into home study courses and so forth. Now, since the start of those two groups, the existing executive and the retired executive business owner who'd sold their business, it has since developed also into the married couples who are in their 30s to 40, 45, where husband and wife are both working, sometimes in the same business, and they have good income and the ability to borrow, and therefore they want to get their equity working for them. They own their own house. They may have one or more other small investment properties started in residential, and realize that as they buy more properties, it gets a nightmare to manage a whole lot of smaller ones, being residential, which is pretty high maintenance as far as your level of time input is concerned. So they were, many of them sold those, consolidated their equity and stepped into commercial property. And then what I found, interestingly, over the last few years is the Gen Y group, who realize that they will probably never be able to have enough equity accumulated to buy their own home and be able to afford the mortgage payments. So what they're looking at doing is buying the smaller strata office properties, which instead of having to outlay $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, they can get for $250,000, $350,000. They sometimes will talk to their family and borrow some of the initial equity to get in there. And then their interest payments are tax deductible because they're earning income rather than putting it into a house where they're not tax deductible. But more importantly, their net yield is 6.5% to 7.5% net, as I said, as opposed to if they bought an apartment for the same amount of money, they would get a gross yield of 5%, probably a net yield of closer to 2.5-3% after they have to pay the stamp, the land tax rates, insurance and so forth, which for a commercial property, as you know, the tenant pays. So what this, it's an interesting group, this one here, that, and they've, as they realize they're able to actually afford decent property, and in on top of that they get additional depreciation benefits, which improves the net result. So even if they bought the property neutrally geared, they get tax benefits from the depreciation. So quite often they're able to step up and buy something around 450, 500, maybe even 600,000. And so they're getting their equity working for them as they progress with their careers. And so that in 5 or 6 or 7 years' time, they have the choice of selling that property and buying their dream home, or more often than not, because at the moment they're living at home and therefore in many cases they're not, they may be paying rent, but it's a nominal rent. But they may even look at buying an apartment rather than a house down the track, because they realise that for them, being close to the CBD is more important because of their social interaction. It's not until they decide to have kids that they really find the need to buy a family home. So I'm finding that in their 20s, they're stepping into the marketplace for the commercial property, the small commercial strata office, but not until they decide to have a family, which may well be in their mid-30s, do they look at buying a house. So it's more a strategic move than anything else. Being forced out of the home buying market, they have themselves come up with this solution to get their equity working for them, allow it to build, use their good income that they're earning to service the loans and get good capital growth over the period, so when the time comes to want to have a family, that they can afford something that's really worthwhile. So those are the four groups: the retired executive senior partner, the existing executive or senior partner who, while they're working, have a significant capacity to borrow, and it's the retired ones that have released the equity out of their businesses that are probably the larger investor. And then there's the husband and wife who are working in their 35, 45 age group, and then there's the Gen Y. So it's an interesting spread, and they're quite different markets, and all of them seem to be highly motivated and ready to make decisions. And because of the material I've provided to them over a period of time, and it, for some of them it's 3 weeks, for some time, some of them it's 3 years, they feel much more confident of entering into the marketplace.
It's interesting that you appear to have four clear groups in which your clients are currently positioned. So that covers the demographics. Now, tell us about the geography. I mean, where do they mainly come from?
Well, I suppose in the same way as there is a spread demographically, there is also a spread in their location around Australia. And it's interesting that probably 80% of my clients are actually interstate, with me being Melbourne-based. 30% seem to come from Brisbane or near Brisbane, 30% in and around Perth, and about 20% from Sydney. And it's interesting the way that they, it just seems that in the current market, there is not a lot of material that they can get hold of relating to commercial property other than American-based books. And a lot of them are very gung-ho, but also the financing and deal structuring and taxation laws are so different that probably only about 50 to 60% of the book is relevant or could be used for Australia. So it's being able to provide material that is hands-on use tomorrow that seems to be the attraction for these interstate investors.
Given that you are in Victoria and your clients are fairly well spread around Australia, how did they come to find you in the first place? And how do you let them know what it is that you can do for them?
Well, as I said, it just seems to be a lack of material in the market for Australian investors. And I have, as you know, 6 or 7 different websites, all related to property in one form. And so depending on what they want and need at the time, they can probably start with a copy of my latest book, and they can get that either digitally or in hard copy. And from there, they may move into the negotiating masterclass and then into the commercial property secrets home study course, and then possibly into the mentor course that I've got, which is only intended for really serious investors, not necessarily with a lot of money, but those that are really dedicated and want to learn and master what's really going on. And that is what I call commercial property gold. And membership is there, as I said, for a group that I work very closely with, and they get personal mentoring each month. We have regular webinars, and then we also have an annual workshop as well. But they get access with that mentor group to all of my material at no cost once they're a member. So this is the way people are able to educate themselves at a pace that they feel comfortable with. And as I said, for some people, it's only 3 weeks before they want to contact me and talk. Some people, it takes longer. And, you know, it may be they have an interest, they know they're going to do something. It may be that they're planning to retire in 2-3 years' time and they just want to do some groundwork in anticipation of that occurring. And once they release the equity in their business, or they might have another property that they've inherited and it has to be realized before they can do anything sensible by way of investment. So they're able to pick a time of their choosing as to when they actually step into the market. But I try and provide the underlying material which gives them a fundamental foundation so that when they do want to step into the marketplace, they do so with confidence and the expectation that they're going to succeed.
Just out of interest, where are most of them looking to invest?
Well, the interesting thing is that even though they are spread, these clients, all around Australia, almost, I would say, 95% of them, it's almost getting up to 100% now, are seeking to buy their property, their investment property, in Melbourne or in and around Melbourne. And I guess in part, particularly over the last 6 or 8 years with the global financial crisis, you've seen the Brisbane and Perth markets collapse completely. Sydney went down, Melbourne went down a little bit, but not as much as the others. And I think in previous podcasts we might have covered that the bias of mining in Brisbane and Perth and finance being focused in Sydney, clearly when those markets collapsed, which they did, the impact is far greater, whereas the tenancy spread in Melbourne is not all one sector. It's spread right across the sector. Sure, we've got BHP head office and National Bank head office here in Melbourne, but it's not any one sector that dominates the marketplace. And so it enables a spread of tenants so that if one sector's down, it doesn't affect the whole marketplace. So it seems to be a a gravitation, if you like, by investors to predictable outcome as far as ongoing rent and capital growth. Now, Melbourne's never going to reach the heady peaks of Brisbane and Perth, but nor is it going to plumb the depths either when those sort of markets collapse. And so you've got to remember that all of my clients are passive investors. Many of them have worked very hard to get the funds that they've accumulated. And one of the first things people want to know when they invest their money is, are they at least going to get their money back? Right. Now, that's the very least they want. Obviously, they're after growth. And when you buy and put the deal together sensibly, that's what you'll get. But the fundamental thing is, will I get my money back? Now, there's many cases in Brisbane and Perth where people have invested. Yes, the market might have been rising, but all of a sudden it plummets and they are in negative territory as far as the value of the property is concerned. And that's what people at, and it doesn't matter whether you're a young couple trying to establish yourself, the last thing you want to do is suddenly see your equity vanish. And I'm not sure whether we're Victorian in name and Victorian in nature and a bit more conservative, but when the global financial crisis hit, there was not a lot of heavy borrowing in Victoria as compared to other states. Therefore, there wasn't a lot of distressed property relatively to the other states come on the market in Melbourne. And therefore, values held pretty much the same. Yes, there was a flattening out, dipped a little bit, but it was reasonably quick to recover. So this is what people want when you're looking at longer-term investment, is steady, predictable income and growth. And that's what I think people are after, and that's why I suspect that even though my clients are spread around Australia, they feel more comfortable purchasing somewhere where it may not have all the excitement of the other cities, but unless you are on the ground there, finger on the tap on the marketplace, and have an intimate knowledge of those commercial marketplaces, which most of them don't because they are entering the commercial sphere of investment later in their careers, therefore they haven't built up that working knowledge, it's dangerous to invest in those sort of markets. You can be seduced by it when it's rising, but it won't go on forever. And therefore, I guess they have been looking to deal with someone who has some runs on the board, has had the experience over 40 plus years, and understands a marketplace that enables you to, with some confidence, go forward knowing that your investment is going to hold its own over a period of time.
And why is that?
Well, as I mentioned a moment ago, it to a large extent is because the Melbourne market has a better balance between the sectors that you're exposed to, rather than a focus of a particular one as it is in Brisbane, Perth, and to a degree in Sydney. But I think also what a lot of people don't realise is that the consistency of growth and the predictability of growth and security of income is determined to a large extent by the concentration of population and population numbers. Now, a lot of people are not aware that 75% of Victoria's population is concentrated within the Melbourne metropolitan area. Now, by way of comparison, it's only 64% of New South Wales' population is concentrated in Sydney. If you go to Queensland, it drops to 48% of the state's population is focused in Brisbane. Now, I don't have the figures for Perth, but I suspect it's a bit less than that. So, of all the capital cities, Melbourne has the greatest proportion of its population there. Sorry, Victoria has the greatest proportion of its population focused within its capital city. And that's what underpins the value in your property, value from a point of view of capital growth, but value in appeal from a tenancy point of view. It's where that congregation of people exists. And I think also from a geographical layout, and we're not doing a Melbourne-Sydney comparison, but moving around in Sydney is very, very difficult. And therefore, you tend to have sectors because of the harbour. It's just physically difficult, very attractive, lovely city. But logistically, it's very hard to move around. And so therefore, you have markets concentrated in specific areas because of the difficulty of moving. Whereas in Melbourne, the way it's set up with its, particularly with its freeway structure, you have the ability to reach your markets much more easily. And so that from a tenancy point of view, there is a lot more flexibility and it provides you with the opportunity to, yes, focus in specific areas, but not necessarily be locked into them. And so it allows a flexibility, but it also allows a greater continuity as far as tenancies are concerned, so that you're not simply dependent upon a group that live and work in a particular area. And because of that, you don't end up with huge ebbs and flows of shortages of space here and shortages of space. If something gets too short in space in one particular area, it's not that difficult for a tenant to find space elsewhere. And so, as I said, you don't get those peaks and troughs that you find not only within capital city, but within capital city markets because of the constraints of geography and topography more than anything else that make it difficult for tenants and their clients to move around. And so it comes down to predictability, but it's that focus, that concentration of people. The greater the number of the people, the greater the likelihood of growth going forward.
I guess all of this could change over time, but the way you've structured things, you should be able to adapt fairly quickly.
Well, what I do by way of providing advice and helping to package deals is obviously not constrained by geography. And over the years, I've also helped clients acquire properties interstate. See, it all comes down to the best place to invest at the time.
This has been very helpful, thank you. And I trust our listeners now have a far better appreciation of how you go about what you do.